Hey, everybody. Welcome to yet another awesome episode of Tall But True. I'm your host, Ben Bailey. I'm here telling stories with my good friend and co-host, Mr. DC Benny.
What's yes, up, indeed.
Pete? What's up, sir?
I'm chilling, man. I'm very excited. We have this guest today that I've only met once.
Yeah, you guys met one time.
In a bizarre outside. Way.
Yeah. It was after the story, the Tall But True Live.
Yes.
We were walking down the street, and our guest here was golf chipping milk cartons across the street, trying to hit them into a box.
mini milk cartons like you used to get in school.
Yeah, like school. Yeah, school milk cartons.
He fills them with tissue and then wraps them in cellophane. And
oh, does he really? He's got a whole process.
Yeah, he's got a process. It's a serious business.
What an interesting dude that guy is.
He is actually an interesting dude.
He takes pictures. He's got pictures of all these famous people doing it.
Yeah, and he's got other random I mean, he fancies himself as a bit of a photographer.
Right.
Well, it wasn't a bad shot. You bought a photo, or you got a photo. That was a pretty good shot.
Yeah, of my own
one of his pictures?
It was the one you were holding.
One of his?
Yeah, I bought one of myself, but I also bought one of Usher.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, that's right.
Was it Usher the day that you met me?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've since bought one of myself. So now there'll be a collection of me and Usher. And if I could get one other super famous person, then it makes me look amazing.
Yeah, it makes you look good. You're on the Mount Rushmore of milk carton chipping.
Yeah.
Our guest, you've heard his voice. We haven't introduced him yet. It's Des Bishop, comedian Des Bishop. What's happening, man?
Oh, it's great to be here in the suburbs.
In the burbs.
I'm not going to give a location just in case you're trying to keep your life a secret.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good to be here at your...
It's a lovely basement studio. You know, looking out under your deck.
Yeah, the under deck view. It's not the best.
Yeah. It's kind of like the opening scene of
Miller's Crossing?
A movie where some girl is, can't get out. Like Room.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, hello, weeds. Yeah. Did you see that movie?
No.
Room. Irish guy directed it, so it's a patriotic connection to it. You know?
Now, tell everyone a little bit about your history. Now, are you from Ireland?
No, I'm from Queens.
You're from Queens, New York.
But I went to boarding school in Ireland.
Ah, right, boarding school.
When I was 14.
When you were 14.
Yeah, which wasn't meant to be forever. But then college was cheap, so I stayed for college. And then while I was in college, I got into comedy. And by the time I was a proper adult, I was a working comedian. And I was like an Irish comedian with a New York accent.
Wow,
so even though
awesome.
I'm like a New Yorker, my career has been completely Irish until recently.
So, abroad.
So boarding school in Ireland.
Yes.
How old are you when you go there?
14.
14.
1990.
You're 14 years old, and you just get sent off. You're going to Ireland to school.
It's a long story, but not the story I came to tell, but the quick version.
That's okay.
But talk about anything. The quick version of this long story is that my first year of high school, St. Francis Prep in Fresh Meadows, Queens, just wasn't a great year. I mean, in hindsight, when you look back, if it was in 2010, I think I would have been called in and they would have said, it's clear that people are fucking with you in this school and it's affecting your grades.
Right,
but
right.
At the time, bullying wasn't a term.
Yeah, sure.
I don't even like using the word bullying
because
I'm from
kid.
A generation where it's like, yeah, I wasn't bullied. I just, So anyway, John Gotti's son was a year ahead of me.
Right.
In St. Francis Prep. And I had
Gotti, I think his name was. John Gotti Jr.
Peter Gotti.
Peter Gotti.
This particular one. And I'd fallen afoul with another Italian kid from Howard Beach who had a thing for my girlfriend. He was my friend and he turned on me. Classic teenage behavior. But unfortunately, when he turns on you and his brother is best friends with Peter Gotti and then turns that whole kind of Howard Beach clique on you.
Oh, shit.
And I was being threatened directly with Peter Gotti's name. Now, you could ask Peter Gotti today. He'd probably tell you, I haven't got a clue what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I even at the time, he might not have known. But the fear, and people kept saying to me, yo, bro, fucking Peter Gotti.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, it was kind of like a stressful, exclusion, classic teenage exclusion situation. And then one of the big incidents was, I remember Holy Cross was playing St. Francis Prep in the basketball. So it's freshman, junior varsity all play the same day. And this kid said, if you don't walk out of here right now, they're gonna jump you, So I had to do a walkout. And, and they were all looking at me and it was
you had to get up and walk out of the place visibly.
So the whole thing was shitty.
And is that why
here's the crazy thing. I was failing because of all this, you know, I was just like, had no interest in school.
Yeah, you're busy fearing for your
life. Exactly. And completely disconnected. And there was other things going on. And so I flunked out. Now, that situation resolved itself. It didn't go on throughout the whole year. It did resolve itself. But anyway, I flunked out. And in the midst of the stress of flunking out and my mother thinking that I was going to end up a drug addict, because, you know, like, there was so much stuff going on. A cousin of mine put it into my brain. She said it to me. She was visiting from Ireland. Oh, you could go to boarding school in Ireland. And I was like, yeah, get the fuck out of here. Because I was like done with Queens. You know, just temporarily, I was like, get me the fuck out of this place. And my mother laughed at me when I said it to her. But then they looked into it, and it was cheap. And it seemed like maybe it might be a good idea, maybe the best thing for me. Because I was big into drinking. There was other things going on that were my responsibility.
You're a problem child.
Yeah, nothing to do with the bullying. That was separate. So anyway,
we all have a taste of that in our.
So youths. The joke I tell in my show is I had a problem with alcohol, so my mother had the ingenious idea to send me to Ireland. But I mean, it's not 100% true.
The source of the problem
gets a laugh. I mean, I've been telling that joke for like 15 years. It still gets a laugh.
Yeah.
Well, it's still to this day. I find it hard not to open with it because it's a very quick and funny way to establish that I'm not a normal kid from Queens, and now you know my history, and now I can just get on with the rest of my shit.
It's a greeting. It's, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of us have a little thing we do like that right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's hard to
it's
find
kind
of
like
lot
a
of
security
them.
Blanket.
They're
it's
so
hard
hard.
To drop
it's
one
so
and come
hard.
Up with a new one.
Yeah. Especially with 15-minute spots to anonymous
crowds.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Like in Ireland, when I'm playing to my fans, I can start with a new joke every show. Like I'll write a new hour. Every time I go out on tour, I'll write a new hour and the new thing, and it's no problem. But when I go to 15 minutes in New York to a crowd that don't know me, I always feel like I find myself 75% of the time leaning back on that opening joke.
Yeah. And I've got a couple.
I do it as an exercise to not do it sometimes, but I feel weird when I do.
Yeah. I do the same thing. I have this same sort of greeting that I often do. I say, how's it going? And then I make a joke about their reaction because often they'll be like, yeah, or like, woo. I'm like, oh, that's a weird way to answer that question. And I'll play with it a little bit. And that's like and then I'm in.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the time it takes 10 seconds, now I'm in.
Yeah.
But after a while, same like you're saying, I'm like, I got to stop saying the same fucking thing every time I come out for my own sanity.
Yeah, plus I think about the waiting staff in the cellar.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and or whatever club.
They get in my brain. Like, they don't say anything to me, but in my mind, I start thinking about them, and I start like thinking of their faces as they're putting a drink down on the table going, oh, this fucking joke again. You know, like, but of course they're not. But
They're not.
Yeah, I got my...
They know.
It's the same thing. It's like the opening joke, it just... I got the, you know, I live in Brooklyn, blah, blah, blah. I heard this argument out of the window the other day. One guy shouts at another guy, you know what the real N-word is? Psh, knowledge. And it's my, it just sets up where I'm going to come from or whatever.
Right.
But I'm so sick of it.
That's such a DC Benny joke.
It is.
It's so you. It's just perfect. But so you're tired of it. The same.
Well, I mean, I had the heroin guy joke before that, but it's so hard to find a good opener in the city for a condensed period of time unless you're super comfortable. And also, it's like when you're playing at like the cellar or whatever. You can't fuck around.
Yeah, you don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not trying out new material.
To kill every time. Yeah.
Yeah. And people can't.
I was like, I literally got to the point where I was like, the next time I go on stage, I am not going to say,
oh, I do that.
Hey, yeah, how's it going? Yeah. I said, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I'm not going to say that. Yeah. And so I walked up there and I was like, just kind of looking at him for like, what felt like way too long.
Yeah.
And then I said, thanks for coming out, everybody. And then I was like,
how's it going?
And I was determined not to do it. And then I said, so I made a joke out of that. I said, and thanks also for then coming back in. Because if you hadn't, you would still be out. And it turned into this huge, it became my opening bit for like a year. And on my last special, turned into like a 5-minute bit about coming in, going out, like this whole thing.
Yeah. Well, that's
so
why
it's really
that's
good
why it's
to,
worth taking
to,
the risk.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my point. It's good to push yourself and go, don't start with the same thing every time.
Well, Greer
but
Barnes,
it's a leap.
Greer Barnes just goes, yeah.
Yeah.
And he has it.
Right.
He has it. You know?
I'm not a comedian. I just, I was walking down
the
street.
Yeah.
Hey, kid, you want to make $7?
Yeah.
He has him before he even says that. He has a little
strut
up to the mic.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Boom.
He has to work to really has to work to make them not like him, you know?
Yeah.
He just goes up and it's like instant likability.
Do you ever get a thing where an MC will say something and you can respond to that and then that becomes a bit of a crutch?
Yeah, totally.
Because lately guys have been saying, this guy's all the way from Ireland. I didn't ask him to say it, but yeah. I don't want them to say credits because I don't really have any. And you know, the Irish ones are meaning, you know, like, it's like, this guy's been on a ton of TV shows you've never fucking heard of. So, they start saying, this guy's all the way from Ireland. And then I walk up and say, I'm actually from Queens. And that gets a laugh. So now it's like, when somebody doesn't say I'm all the way from Ireland, I'm like, oh, fuck.
You're like, yeah, what am I going to say? I'm actually from Queens.
It's just an icebreaker, you know? Like,
why are you telling us actually?
So stupid. And once you get going, it's irrelevant. It's just it's that first 10 seconds.
Well, I always rationalize it like, okay, if I'm going to do that, there's going to be some chunk in there that's newish, you know. I've bookended it with that shit.
Yeah,
exactly.
Here we go.
Bookending's a great way to try some new stuff.
Yeah.
One time, it's funny, you get used to people introducing you the same way, if it's the same MC or whatever. Yeah. and you know their bits, like Keith Robinson is MCing at the Cellars years ago. And I come walking in, and Keith used to have this bit. He'd be like, women with flat asses make me physically sick. He'd be like, I can't stand it. He goes, you know what I'm talking about. You see an Asian couple walking down the street. You can't tell who's who. And so he's just making fun of Asians, right? And then they would pick out an Asian girl in the crowd and go, did that offend you? And she'd be like, she'd say yes. And he would say, call me a nigger and make it okay. Jeez. Right? So I'm walking in one night, and as I'm walking in, Keith is like, women with flat asses make me physically sick. And I'm like going through the room, and then I get into the bathroom, and I hear him doing the other bit. And then some guy comes in, he's like, hey, are you Ben Bailey? And I'm like, yeah. So this guy's talking to me while I'm pissing, and I lose track of what Keith's doing. But I remember that he was doing that bit. Then I get brought up like two acts later on the same show. And I'm working out a new bit at the time. I can't remember what it was, but it was something that had Mexicans in it. And I say something, and someone gets offended, goes, oh. And I'm thinking Keith finished that bit, but he didn't. So I say, thinking it'll make things better to this person who's upset with me for just like saying the word Mexican, I say, just call Keith a nigger and make everything okay. But he didn't say that part of the bit.
Oh my God.
Everybody was groaning and just like, they all but booed me off the stage. The only sound you can hear is Keith laughing his ass off in the hallway.
He
goes, I didn't finish the bit. I didn't finish the bit. I'm like, son of a bitch. This is
that's awesome.
That's a good story.
That's awesome.
Did you have him on this podcast?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Keith has been in here. Yeah.
Did you tell that story then?
No, I just remembered it. I just remembered it now.
I feel privileged to have been the guy that brought that story out of here.
Yeah, you reminded me of it.
That's a good bit.
It's funny.
But you have to say the N-word, which in itself
twice.
Is problematic.
Twice. In the setup. And
Right. It's like the guy, who was the guy? Hood, who used to...
Oh,
there was
God,
this guy, Hood. I don't know if you ever met him.
No,
was
I don't
comic.
Know.
Well, he was Iranian.
Hood was...
Iranian.
And if you said Iranian, he would get very angry. And it's Iranian.
And he came on... His big closer was he was strapped with fake dynamite, and he would take his shit off, and he had this... Like, you know, he carried a fucking dynamite with him everywhere.
He had
every time
a fake dynamite
set.
Strapped to his body. And at the end, he would open his sweater.
Yeah.
His Alex Rieger cardigan sweater.
Right.
And reveal the dynamite.
Well, he did that up till 9/11, and then that was it. That killed his... That was the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
You never saw that bit again.
Collateral damage of 9/11.
Like September 14th or 15th, when we were back doing shows again, everybody was like, hello, Hood, it's Esty. Could you please do for us
never again.
But that guy, what about Hood?
That guy had... he had a story actually about opening for his friend with maybe cerebral palsy.
Yes.
And it was like a similar dynamic where, oh God, how did it go?
The guy would go up ahead Hood went on before him.
Yeah.
I think.
Or he went on as him one
and
night.
And pretended that he had cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
And then said, by the way, the next comedian you're going to see is not my friend. He's a guy who makes fun of me for having cerebral palsy. So he sets it up. So the guy who really does is fucked. He can't even go up and say anything, and they're going to start booing him. You know?
Whether that's true or not.
It's a good gag.
It's a good gag, regardless of whether it's true
yeah,
or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Never let the truth get in the way of a good
story. So when did you come to New York? Because I never ran across you. Except for
until a few weeks ago.
No, in fact, I knew your name because the lads in Shanghai,
those guys,
spoke of you highly.
So funny, you guys knew both had heard of each other when you were in China.
Via China, yeah.
Yeah.
So but you had never met.
Actually, China's a little bit to do with why I came back to New York because originally I was supposed to spend a year in China, so I was making a TV show about learning Chinese to do stand-up comedy in Chinese.
Huh.
There's no quick stories in all these stories.
That's okay.
But anyway,
not in a hurry.
I was doing that for Irish TV, but actually I loved gigging there so much, and I loved living there so much. I stayed another year.
Where did you live?
I was living in Beijing.
Uh-huh.
The series we filmed was in Beijing. I mean, I traveled around, but the base was Beijing. It's better for learning Chinese than Shanghai. Less English speaking.
Love Shanghai, though.
But then I got into doing stand-up in Chinese, and I was into doing stand-up in English in China. I was in that whole scene, so it's kind of I just stayed there. So my second year, I was just living in Beijing. I was still leaving, doing festivals and different things, but I was based in Beijing. So then after 2 years, I was like, fuck it, man. You know, I'm like so I'm so disconnected from Ireland at this time, and my whole entire career has been in Ireland. Why don't I use this period of disconnection to start to reconnect to New York? So when I came back, I did my Made in China show in the Barrow Street Theater and then started to begin the journey of coming back here.
Uh-huh.
But the money in Ireland has pulled me back a lot.
Yeah, so you make more doing stand-up in Ireland?
Well, yeah. I mean, I have a proper career there. I'm only establishing myself.
Stuff,
only establishing myself here. But this year now, since I've been back now in May, I'm 100% full-time here. But it did take me 2 years to properly cut the umbilical cord.
Mm.
Huh.
So I've come here to the suburbs of New Jersey to really launch my career.
This is where it happens.
When I'm accepting my Oscar, I'm going to think about the underside of your deck.
There's 40 people out there
that
listening.
That was the moment.
One of them.
That was
might
the
be
moment
important.
That I knew.
That's great. That's an interesting trajectory of
Queens to Ireland.
Irish guy doing
to
comedy
China,
in China
and back to New York.
Yeah, well, I'm from Flushing, so that makes it seem like it's a perfect circle, but. The Flushing thing was not that related to it. But I did...
Part of Ireland were you living in?
Well, originally I went to Wexford, then I went to college in Cork, and now I live in Dublin. But when I originally came back and I was doing this show in the Barrow Street Theater, it was like a one-man show about my time in China called Made in China. Not that original. And
sounds interesting.
The New York Times, it's just like a good story for the New York Times, so they were into it. But the main hook that they wanted was guy from Flushing spends his life in Ireland and finds himself back in Flushing because he has become a Chinese language stand-up comedian. So they did go for that circular journey.
Right.
But it was,
right.
To be honest, it wasn't 100% genuine, but they did go for that hook.
That's all right. It's showbiz.
However, I did have a lucky break with that. The day that we shot the photo in Flushing Main Street, because I have been on Chinese TV a few times performing in Chinese, New York Times guy right there and the photographer, this guy stops me on the street in Chinese.
Oh,
and he's like,
shit.
Whoa, you're the stand-up comedian. I saw you performing on the show. Like
he's
in Chinese.
This in Chinese.
Yeah, all this
I like
in
how
Chinese.
You have a little bit of an accent when you speak English where guys was actually speaking Chinese.
Oh, do I? I try to give it a
minute. You're the
guy. He's like, that's what he said.
Oh, it's very impressive.
But,
it's pretty cool, dude.
And nega, as you know, many comedians have joked about it. Nega is a word that's used commonly
like,
in China.
Exactly.
But it means that. So he was saying, you're that stand-up comedian. Anyway, that was happened right in front of the journalists.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That even added to the thing.
Yeah, they must
So then everybody was like,
excited.
You're going to make so much money, you're famous in China. Yeah. It's like, well, it's not 100% true.
It seems that way.
People
but
keep
perception
thinking,
is a big part
cents
of this business.
Off, if you could get 10 cents off 10% of the Chinese population, you'd be rich. It's like, many have fucking tried.
Yeah.
It's
not as billion, easy. How many Chinese people are there?
1.4 billion.
And how many of them live in abject poverty?
Well, you know, it's getting better. I mean, in fairness, I'm not a big defender of the Chinese government, but one thing they have done is shifted a hell of a lot of people out of poverty.
Huh. That, wow, that's great.
That is undeniable.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. At the expense of people in Ohio, it seems. Hence the rise of, hence the rise of Donald Trump. But, you know,
that's interesting, man.
Unfortunate.
It's a great story.
I blame the Chinese.
Money is being funneled directly from Cleveland.
Yeah, you just got to... If the next time somebody's angry at Trump, say, it's the fucking Chinese, man. The Chinese took the fucking factories out of Ohio, and we got Trump.
Oh, shoot.
The coal miners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, real progressive. Like, go to, like, that's what makes me laugh when people are like, we're going to bring these jobs back. And it's like, go to fucking China, man. You can't see in front of your face with the pollution.
Crazy.
Is There's, that what you want?
There are no coal jobs to get back.
Is that what you want?
It's all done like by a machine. We don't even mine the way we used to.
We're going
to
bring back the coal mines. We're going to take away your health care so that you can,
yeah,
you can have
great.
10 decent years. And then when you get lung cancer, you're not going to get looked after. So all that money is going down the fucking toilet.
The black lung fund. That's something, man.
Wow.
It's fucking liberals. Fucking liberal comedians.
Oh, shoot.
Jeez, man. I've never been to China. Well, I've actually been to the airport in China on my way to Thailand.
Dude, it's cool.
You did a change.
It's
Oh, China's great. I mean, if you ever want to do a special China episode, I can give you plenty of
a special China
China
stories.
I can give you plenty of China gear.
You guys could do that.
Can I tell you my in the last hour Chinese story?
Yes, absolutely.
From the Starbucks in I won't say where, just in case you're worried about your crazy 40 fans showing up at your door.
You were just down the road.
I was down the road in Starbucks. And I was shocked by the amount of Chinese that were there. And I was alert to it because I had seen a few Chinese shops. But it turns out it's not a Chinese area. But anyway, when I went into Starbucks, it was 50% Chinese people. So I ordered my coffee and I was sitting outside. And there was all these little kids, like four of them, approximately between 8 to 10 years old. And I had heard their Chinese mentor say something to the woman about them, you know, needing to speak more English. And she said, don't worry, I only speak English with them. You know, I'll keep asking them questions. Then he went inside. So this woman was drilling these kids with questions. And, like, they could not understand a word that she was saying. They said, yeah, like, three times. Two times they were right. Like, you know, like the one word that they have, you know, like, yeah. And but it was annoying me because I was trying to enjoy my coffee. Yeah. And at the same time, I knew they were Chinese. So I was dying to fucking practice my Chinese, you know. So this woman was like saying, have you been to any other parts of America? And he goes, my Chinese is not good. Or my English is not good. And she's like, have you been to other parts of America? Have you been anywhere else? Like anywhere else was going to be the thing that would clinch it. So eventually I just like out of frustration, I turned around. I was like, 他想知道你在美国去别的地方吗? So like, you know, like she wants to know what other parts of fucking America have you been at? Oh, and then I said, answer her in English. Right? Like, but then of course they were distracted.
Blow them
so
away,
was like, man. Like, you can speak Chinese. So anyway, I started speaking to them in Chinese. And then of course the English woman was just as impressed. And then the mentor came back out. And they said he can speak Chinese. So he said, oh, you can speak in Chinese. He was like, you speak Chinese. Where'd you learn Chinese? I said, Beijing. He said, how long? I said, 2 years. So he turns to the kid and he goes, he's learning Chinese for 2 years and he's fluent. You've been learning English for 6 years. You can't speak a sentence. And then I felt a little guilty. I felt bad for ruining the kid's day.
Oh, I wouldn't feel bad. Yeah. It'll motivate them.
That's badass, though. That's like every
that is pretty badass.
Every round eyes fantasy, man. To be on the subway, you hear some Chinese people talking, you think it's about you, and to be able to, you know, be like,
I know what you're saying.
What's it called? Not Turner, Andy.
Yes.
Took me to get a massage in China.
Oh.
And before I went to China, Jimmy Schubert, the comedian Jimmy Schubert.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, he did my gig in Beijing.
Oh, that guy, man. He's like,
a funny dude.
Bro, you got to get a tornado. And I'm like, what's a tornado? He's like, bro, fucking Chinese chick hangs upside down on a rope and spins around and blows you. And that's a tornado, right? And I'm like, that can't be real, right? It can't be real. But it's in the back of my head the whole time. So Andy, one of the bookers or the creators of this Kung Fu comedy show, is like, we're going to go, me, you, and my wife, we're going to go get this massage. And I'm thinking this fucking tornado thing or whatever. And he takes us, and there's a beautiful lady at the desk, and she's like, you know, would you like oil? And I'm like, you know, I'm fucking married and blah, blah. I'm like, nah, you know, like sand, gravel, none of that shit. And she's not the one doing the massage. This other lady that looks like the dude that Bruce Lee fought Bolo, the fucking, the Gary Shandling guy that looks like Gary Shandling.
Sammo Hung.
Yeah, Sammo Hung.
Actor is Sammo Hung,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, it's Bolo. It's Bolo. Bolo Yang. Yang.
Right.
Sammo Hung is who we fought Bolo in Young. The underwear in the beginning.
Okay.
So the Bolo is the guy with the tits. So just, and I don't know, I have my little sheet with the only Chinese, like, couple phrases or whatever. She knows very little English. And it was such a violent fucking massage. It was so painful.
Yeah, they get
so
into
all
it.
I know is Ni Hao Shei Shei. Ni Hao Shei Shei. And she keeps says, she goes, no pain, no gain. So she's like, no pain, no gain. I'm like, Ni Hao Shei Shei.
You're
and
just
I'm
saying, hello, thank you. Hello,
yeah, I know,
thank
that's
you.
All I know.
That's literally what I know. Hello, thank you. Hello, thank you. She's like, no pain, no gain. You're like, thank you, thank you.
Hello.
I agree.
Hello.
Hello, I
hello.
Agree.
Thank you. That's hilarious, dude.
But the funniest part is I finally got her to be, like, gentle. You know, like, not put the elbow in my fucking neck and do whatever. And she's right. Like rubbing, like, you know, in the crevices, and I get a fucking boner.
Oh, you got a boner.
I got a boner, but I'm laying down. You can't, you know, there's no way for her to know.
Your
and then she
down.
Got up on my back and is like standing there, and she was big. She was a big.
She was Bolo.
She was Bolo. So
she just snapped your neck with her foot.
Dude.
Like Bruce Lee.
There's a hole for the face, which I guess is for the tears or whatever, but there's this, it's like a board. So it's getting mashed with her, you know, like a school bus backing over a garden hose, you know, like a fucking tapeworm panini. And that was the end of the massage. I was like, hey, you got it. I'm good or whatever. But it was like, it went from a violent massage to like vaguely sexual, but not really. It wasn't like anything.
But she didn't offer to finish.
No, she didn't do any of that. But it was just she was in the area, and it was a legit massage. But, you know, it was sensitive. And anyway, my dick got mushed is the end of the story.
Got hard and then mushed.
You got smushed into the board.
Yeah, smushed into the board.
I know a guy who was...
great massage otherwise, though.
Went to get a massage at a place in London, and he didn't know. You know, if you're not... Not familiar with where you are that much. You really don't know what you're getting into when you go into a massage parlor. So he was like looking for a place to get a massage. He didn't know if he was going to find a rub and tug or what. But he was kind of like, yeah, if I do, I do.
Right.
Then we'll see what happens. So he goes into this place, and I think there's a guy behind the desk. He makes his appointment. He says, come back in a little while. We have this woman, I can't remember her name, but a very Swedish name. So he's like, oh, maybe it'll be this beautiful Swedish woman. That would be great. So he waits 10, 15 minutes, whatever. Sure enough, this gorgeous blonde woman comes out and says, are you ready for your massage? He says, yeah, and they go in. And she's being very friendly and flirty and everything. And he's like, oh, this is going to be a rub and tug. This is amazing. This beautiful woman is going to jerk me off, he's thinking. And so... when he turns over in the massage, he's got a hard on, and she sees it, and she says, would you like to have a vank? And he says, oh, yes. And she says, I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Yeah, she left the room.
She left the room so he could take care of it himself.
I've never had a vank.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds
it's like, wait, what? Huh?
Hello?
That's not what I thought was going to happen here.
Well, that's disappointing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's funny, not to keep going on about China, but you don't see Chinese men in... like Americans or Caucasian women so much. It's mostly
the other way around.
Yeah, the other way around. Way. That's no great observation, but it was odd to see it, you know, there. There's a large amount of, you know, like...
Western men. Asian women.
And Asian women, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Do you have an Asian girlfriend, Des?
No, I had one.
Had one?
Didn't speak English.
Really?
None
well,
at
it
all.
Doesn't matter. And you're able
no,
to...
but yeah, our relationship was entirely through Chinese.
Well, that's incredible.
Oh, that's pretty amazing.
That's
we incredible. Broke up in Chinese and everything.
Oh, shit.
No, it's just fucking weird. It's like I, when I was weird. Breaking up with her, it's like eventually I literally said to her, like, I don't know what else to say, but I literally didn't even know how to say it. You know, like I
yeah,
ran out
yeah.
of... I went beyond my abilities of language.
Like I literally don't. I really.
It's terrible though because I guess it's a Chinese
say.
Thing. But she started like listing off all the great things about me, but not like in a way of not like in a way of like we shouldn't break up, but just like I guess it's a Chinese
saying goodbye.
Thing.
It's like a
yeah,
closure
like,
thing.
You know, you're
here's
a great
what's
guy.
Great
I wish
you
all the best. And
oh,
I was
wow.
just like, oh fuck.
It's very polite.
Yeah.
That is so different. From any yeah, breakup yeah. I've ever had.
I yeah, want half right. your shit.
You're right.
Yeah, mine are just usually like a huge fight
go
and then everyone
yourself.
Feels
yeah.
like shit for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, and then maybe there's an accidental fuck later on or something that it's reopens the whole shit and then it's... Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking last year I had this brief relationship with this girl I met at the cell and she was nice, but it just kind of fizzled out. And when I said it to her, she was like, I knew you were a fake. You're a washed up comedian. You fuck, go fuck Oof. Yourself. I was
oh,
like, Jesus Christ.
Like, you're like, well, I wonder why this wasn't working.
Yeah, you could have said I would have had a small dick. That would have
right.
been more effective.
Right.
Wow.
You're a washed up comedian. I
like,
knew. You're like, so what, you just weren't saying anything?
Fucking Chinese girlfriend was like, you're an amazing person. I wish you seven generations of luck.
Jesus, amazing.
On
that's
your large
so
penis.
Much
I wish
better.
Luck on your ancestors. Oh, she thought I had a large penis.
Everything's
cultural,
relative.
It's a cultural right. difference.
It's fantastic. Fantastic.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Chinese breakup. Huh. I never had a girl tell me how great I was when I was breaking up with her.
I know. Yeah. Well, you haven't had that one relationship that just was clearly time to end, and then it just ended positively.
No.
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 Yeah. Well, yeah.
Although yeah, I have to say that I'm really, as far as relationships go, am just really an adult in that category in the last 10 years of my life or something. Where you actually know how to handle a relationship,
oh, yeah.
and you understand what you want from it, and what you kind of are supposed to, what part you're supposed to provide, and you know. So I think if it were to happen at this point, it would be probably more like that.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
it'd be
I
more
always
practical.
Think the 35th time is a charm.
It's not working, you know. You're a great person. It's just
yeah, it's cool.
Well, comedy's tough on relationships.
Oh my
you know?
God,
absolutely,
yes.
It's fucking hard, yeah. man.
On so many reasons
to,
why.
Soldier,
you're never yeah. around. You love your job too much. You got a yeah. lot of options.
You need yeah. a lot of attention.
You know, there's yeah. some ugly comedians that
you're
get
insecure.
A lot of fucking female attention.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, comedy makes you attractive.
It
yeah,
just
so
it, takes
it is tough.
A woman appreciates a man who can make her laugh.
Yeah, so I mean, I know nobody's giving us any sympathy right now, but it is a toughie. You know?
It is. It really is. It is hard on relationships.
I give my
just the traveling alone.
I give the just, wife props, yeah. man, for hanging in. You know.
Oh, because you're this, married. Right?
I'm married. Yeah. So I mean, I give her props for hanging in there, but it's hard on it. It's hard on a relationship, man.
Do you have kids?
No.
Oh well, that makes
by
it
by choice.
A little
so that's. Yeah.
Cats and dogs.
Yeah, cats and dogs. Cats and dogs. But
yeah, but then you leave her with the dog all the time when you fuck off.
Yeah, when I go to
yep.
Yeah.
Leave him with everything. Bye. You got to take care of everything.
Yeah.
Got to manage this whole house, this whole everything.
Meanwhile, I'll be getting massages in Shanghai.
Well, hey.
I'll be getting a
it
tornado.
Was legit.
I'll be getting a tornado in Shanghai. You look after Fido.
It was legit, for the record.
No tornado.
Yeah.
So is this how your thing usually flows? You guys just chat?
Yeah.
Yeah,
much.
Yeah.
Whatever comes up.
Oh, really? Whatever comes up?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, it was like, here's what we're talking about. And then it was like, you know what? Let's just make it more conversational.
Yeah.
I know you had a story you were planning on sharing.
Well, I mean,
with
but
us.
That's only because I thought that's what you wanted.
That would be
yeah,
great.
No, well, it's just a good.
Because it's like a
like
I thought it was
idea.
Like a storytelling show, right?
It is. It is.
Sorry.
And I still want to hear that story.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll tell that story.
I'm still curious about it. I haven't heard any.
I'm curious
about
it,
too.
I don't really tell it.
Well, then it's,
I mean, it's
got to
quite
be told.
Revealing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, as it turns out, our conversation somehow seems to.
It seems to be heading that way
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. Just, I don't
rub
think
and tugs.
I don't
right.
think
right.
that was deliberate. I don't think that was deliberate.
No, it's
no.
It's
no,
organic,
it just flowed that
man.
Way.
It's organic.
Well, my story that I thought about telling
has
a name because many, many years ago, I wrote it down as a short story to remember it. The
oh,
short
cool.
story was called, Have You Got Another $20?
Sounds good already.
And I know the economist out there is going, my God, this story is from a long time ago. It's a lot of inflation since this story has been written. But then when you said to me, oh yeah, it's a storytelling show. Mm. I thought, oh, would I tell that story? Because I told it once on stage, like about 14 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, on an improv. Right. Like I was hosting. I used to host this gig every Thursday in Dublin, and you know, you just like, you don't want to tell the shit you said before. I don't know. Somehow it came up, and you ever have that moment on stage where you're like, fuck it, I'm going to tell it.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah.
But it's not like a.
And you may say it, and then they'll be like, yeah, tell it.
Yeah. And then you kind of feel like you've got license to tell it because they asked for it. So even if it's shit, it's like, guys, if it's shit, it's on you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you made this happen. You brought this on yourselves.
But I told it. But, I mean, I wouldn't, you know. And especially now I'm guarded about telling it only because, you know, like in Ireland, if, you know, like there'd be certain people that could sensationalize it. But I think it's long enough ago now. I mean, this story is from 1995.
There you go.
So it's 1995. Where are you?
So in 1995, I stopped drinking. I was 19 years old. Right. And I was a bad drinker.
You stopped drinking 2 years before you could legally start.
Legally start in America. I had been drinking legally in Ireland for a year. Because you can drink from 18 in Ireland.
Right.
But anyway, me and booze, it was never meant to be. So that again, is another story. But
good
from
you
17,
figured it out then.
From 17 to 19, I was trying to stop. Because I was just a real Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde drinker. Like... blackout, you know the way some people blackout and like people show you pictures of you like passed out in the street.
Yeah.
Like I would blackout, and when I come out of the blackout, absolute chaos was happening around me, and it was all my fault. You know, like, yeah. I used to joke on stage and say, people say, why'd you stop drinking? And I'd say, well, I got sick and tired of coming out of blackout, surrounded by humongous amounts of angry people. And I turned to my friend and I'd say, what's going on here? And I'd say, I don't know, but it's all got to do with you.
But you made it happen.
Yeah, you made it. So anyway, like loads
talk
of
to
fight.
Peter Gotti.
Yeah. Thank God I didn't bump into him when I was drunk, because I would have the fucking stupid balls to think I could resolve
another
the situation.
Thing, Gotti.
So anyway, I got into drugs. It's funny, most people fucking think, you know, drugs is the thing that stopped them. But for me, drugs was the thing that stopped me drinking, because I didn't get violent when I was taking drugs. So I thought, oh, drugs are great. But then it just escalated the emotional turmoil. And finally, at 19, I stopped drinking. But, you know, I'm like an addict in my soul.
Mm.
So from 1990...
What were you doing? Coke and weed? Or
to be honest, a lot of ecstasy and acid was like the rave drugs of the time.
Right.
And it was more to do with access. There wasn't a lot of fucking coke floating around Cork. I was my first year of college in Ireland was in Cork. And there was a big dance drug scene there. So, but that ecstasy really and a little bit of speed was kind of the accelerant for me at the time. Mm. Anyway, I just couldn't stop. You know, like once all my friends were taking one on a Saturday, having a good time. And then I just like would go for until the money ran out. So anyway.
I tried it once, ecstasy. It was amazing.
Yeah, I got to be honest,
so
man.
Good.
The ecstasy in the mid-90s in Europe especially was exceptional. Because I took some in Ireland before, or in America before I stopped, and it was incomparable. The ecstasy in Europe at that time, it was exceptional. It was a great feeling. So anyway, from 1992 to 1995, during the summer, I had a great doorman's job in Chelsea in London Terrace Towers. Great four corners, 23rd Street, 24th Street, between 8th and 9th, or between 9th and 10th. So you worked all those corners. But if anyone knows New York City in the mid-90s, particularly close to 11th Avenue, there was loads of hookers that used to...
Oh, yeah.
I used to live there. Not, I mean...
D.C. used to work that corner.
I lived
yeah, it did.
I lived across from the Port Authority on top of Kaufman Surplus. You know,
oh, yeah. So
42nd 8.
Further up, right?
Further up.
So, you know, that whole strip.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And once you got too far down... Yeah. They changed
trannies.
From women to trannies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So 23rd Street was kind of the border of that.
So I've heard from...
Norton.
Yeah, from Jim Norton.
Oh, yeah. Jim Norton's got a lot of these types of stories. So anyway...
Jimmy's like, you're going too far north.
south.
Turn
south.
Around. Go south. South. That's great.
Oh, it's great to be around guys that it's so normal for. In Ireland, people are like, I would never do that now. That's disgusting. I'd rather jerk off now. But what's wrong with your own hand now? You have to be going to look for the hands of others. I had done it a few times, like gotten, you know, like there was just so much fucking prostitution around there. I had done it a couple of times, like you get a blowjob behind a truck or whatever. But when I stopped drinking, you know, I was sober, but I was looking for kicks. And like it does when you're working on 23rd Street, like it does normalize it. You know, like I'd be working the doorman's job. And I remember Susan Sontag was one of my tenants. She's dead since. very serious woman, but this street had had another side. So like sometimes the women would pop in and they'd be like, "Hey, sugar, you know what day you can't park here?" You know, like asking me about parking. They're parking their car before they head up to 11th Avenue to you know, suck
to
dick.
Trick.
Yeah, to trick. And so it just kind of normalized it, you know?
Yeah.
It took the mystique away. And I have to say, I got a little into it for a while, like in the summer of 95, my summer of sobriety. But it happened to be at the same fucking time that it was starting to disappear.
Uh-huh. Right.
You
prostitution
know?
Was.
Yeah.
They
so
were cleaning up.
Yeah.
Cleaning
it wasn't
up. Moving to Hunts Point or whatever.
It wasn't as prevalent.
Is that Giuliani? Or is that pre?
Giuliani's era.
Giuliani. Yeah.
It was Giuliani. Was
cleaning it up. The Disneyfication.
Just moved it. He moved it along.
Yeah.
New York.
So
yeah.
Particularly Times Square. You know, Times Square was in a major transition. So sometimes if nothing was going down on 11th Ave, I used to like walk around Times Square. But it wasn't like, you know, I nearly got robbed once. I remember this one time I asked this girl and she was like, yeah. And then these three fucking guys walk up with us. And they're like, yeah, just go up here, just go up here. And luckily, I don't know, this woman had a heart, but she whispered in my ear as we were walking. She's like, these guys are going to rob you. You got to run. And I just fucking jetted. Like, the woman
shit.
Saved me.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. She must have really liked you.
I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, she couldn't have picked up much in the 70 seconds that this was happening. But, you know, even that I loved. I loved the fucking, you know, the excitement of a kid from Queens, and I'm in the middle of all this fucking mayhem at the end of an era of, you know, Times Square between
when I was there,
8th and 9th Avenue, man. You know, so this one day I'm in Times Square, and like nothing's going, like there's just no seediness in the day. Can't find anything. And I'm walking around. I don't drive.
Right.
So this Asian woman comes up next to me, and she starts talking to me, but she doesn't seem like a prostitute. So I'm like cagey about it. And so then eventually she's like, so what do you want to do? I was like, I don't know. I just, you know, I don't know. And she's like, well, what do you want? I was like, a blowjob? You know, I was like, and she's like, yeah, you got $20? And I was like, I got fucking $20.
Yeah, I got $20.
Yeah, I got $20. Like, we're good. You know, I make $13.50 an hour. So she was like, okay. So I give her the $20, and we walk around the corner to this, like, well, what I at the time said was a welfare hotel. I guess it's like an hourly hotel. Yeah. You know, back in that day, there was a lot of them. Right. And, you know, you got to remember, like, Times Square was real different back then.
Oh,
so
it
just was like, fucking,
there's like sex shops all
over
the place.
Scary. The vibe was scary. So we walk into the shop, and she gives the guy at the fucking little window of this lobby of this hotel $10. So I'm like, holy shit, this is a fucking $10 blowjob. You know, this is fucking crazy.
She's asking you for a 20, but she knows she's $10 in for the room.
She's giving this guy $10. So then we go up, and I always remember walking down the hall, and this one door was open. This fucking huge black guy was listening to the TV really loud, and it just felt like a scene from Cagney and Lacey.
Yeah.
You know, it had like it had a vibe, you know? It had a vibe, and I was walking down, and then suddenly we're in this room, you know, and it's just like, I don't know. For me, the whole thing was weird. So we sit down, get down to the underwear. She gets down to the underwear, and we're like lying down in the bed. But she doesn't like, you know, normally in these situations, it's like quick, right? Yeah. They want to get in and back out. But she's like, she's not really tricking, you know?
Right.
It seems like she's
she
just
seem
like
to be
wants
in a
the
hurry.
Company. And then about 5 minutes into just chatting, and I remember,
in your underwear.
I remember trying to be funny. She was trying to be funny, and she like rubbed my, I remember she rubbed my thing, and she's like, oh, it was small, now it's big. Like, I'm like, you know, like that was like her sense of humor.
That's anyway. Going to make the highlight reel right there.
Yeah.
She rubbed my thing.
Five to 10 minutes.
First time she ever said it too, you know?
So I should probably point out at this stage that I'm a regular attender of both AA and NA meetings, by the way.
Okay.
This would not be the most sober behavior of all time.
Uh-huh.
Regular meeting goer, but also fond of a little trip down the wild side.
Mm-hmm.
So about 10 minutes into it, she pulls out her first hit of crack.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like only a couple of weeks. Like, I'm not that long sober. I've never smoked crack. And now I'm, so she takes it out and she lights it up. You know, she's like,
do you mind? She's got a spoon.
No, she had what looked like a makeshift crack pipe out
like
of a Bic pen.
Oh, yeah.
Out of a Bic pen. But it might have been some other type of crack pipe. But it was a crack pipe anyway.
Yeah.
And but I remember that she pushed the bit of crack into the end far away from her, lit it, smoked it, and then, you know,
died.
She was fucking high.
Yeah.
And Jesus. Very happy. So the room, I'd never smelt crack before. So now the room smells of crack. And you know, it's before the smoking ban.
And hey, there's no smoking in here.
I'm fucking lying there in my underwear. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, how the fuck did I end up in this situation, right?
With a crackhead hooker.
With a fucking crackhead.
Who's
yeah.
not really a hooker.
It looks like she's not a hooker. She's just happy to get a couple of extra hits and some fucking white guy to chat to for an hour while she gets high. So that was fine. I had to wait for that hit to fucking die off. And I'm so fucking Irish. I'm like really worried about offending her. You know, like I'm like literally like, I don't want this woman to, you know, but I want to get the fuck out of here. You know, like I was really uncomfortable. And so then like about 10 minutes, 15 minutes pass and she fucking lights, she smokes crack again. And now she's getting like weird. She's telling me that she can move the curtains. She's like, look at the curtains. I can move them with my mind. And then she was like, see, did you see it move? I moved it. I moved it, you know?
Shit.
She's like, it's fucking out there, you know?
And you didn't see it move, just for the record.
Just for the record, I don't think she can move curtains, you know?
With her mind.
Yeah, with her mind.
Against
crack
all odds.
Crack or no crack. So after her third hit of crack, and she had kept saying to me, like, we're friends, right? We're friends. You know, she kept saying things like this, you know? Just
right.
like weird conversations like, and
yeah.
no sexual
yeah, sure.
contact. So after her third hit of crack, like I have to have been in there for like close to an hour. I'm just like, oh, you know, I was like, listen, you know, it's cool. You know, like maybe you could just like, you know, just give me a hand job and I'll just go, you know, cause I think eventually she probably would have just like had, you know, like I think
yeah.
she was just happy to just be chilling in this room.
To be cracked out.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
So. She,
maybe we could settle this with a hand job.
Yeah, like, you know, I mean, crack is your thing. My thing is blowing my load with strangers. You know, like I'm currently in the midst of a blowing my load with strangers addiction. So if you wouldn't mind.
Please like, assist.
And by yeah. the way, I'm not condoning this behavior. I'm being very honest. I was 19.
That's
so
great.
anyway, she was pissed off at me for suggesting this. You know, she was like, oh, I thought you were my friend. You know, like I thought we were hanging out. You know, and I was like, yeah, I know, but, you know. I got to get, you know, I got to get out of here, whatever. Long story short, she made me feel really bad about a fucking hand job. I mean, if there was a fucking Catholic hand job, it was this one. Like, really, fuck, I paid for my fucking hand job, and now I'm made to feel guilty for it. Yeah, and actually, I didn't
paid
pay for a
hand
job. I paid for a fucking blow job, which I don't want
to... time to bank.
I don't want to demean her in any way, because I appreciate that she was probably going through her own, you know, dealing with her own demons. So, anyway, she did it begrudgingly, and it was fine. But she was fucking pissed off, you know?
Yeah.
And she's lying there, you know, she's lying in bed in her underwear high. And so I start getting dressed. And in my bag is an NA meetings list.
Right.
So I decide this is a good time to, like, 12-step her. Like, tell her that there is another way. So
shit.
I said, listen, you know, like, if you want to get help, like, you can go here. And the minute I fucking, the minute she sees the diamond, the symbol of NA, like, it's clear to me that this is not her first encounter with Narcotics Anonymous.
Uh-huh.
She goes, I knew it. Like, unload, like, goes crazy. Like, I oh. knew it. I knew it. I thought you were my friend. I am the 12 steps. I am the higher power. She starts fucking roaring at me. I am
shit.
The higher power. So, like, she's really versed. She's really versed
in
NA,
NA
jargon.
Jargon, yeah.
Right? Fuck you. Like, fucking unloading me. I'm,
power.
Like, fucking getting my socks. I'm, like, fucking getting dressed like I'm fucking freaking out. So I put the meetings list in my bag. And I remember being in the hall and going past the fucking big black dude with the fucking TV. And I was like thinking that they were all going to come and get me, that they all heard her shouting. And I just can't wait to get out of this fucking welfare hotel in my mind. And I get out into fucking Times Square and I get back to Queens. And I remember I was supposed to meet this girl the next day, like a proper nice girl. And this was years ago before cell phones.
Right.
And I think I was supposed to meet
different
her.
Different world.
Yeah. I think I was supposed to meet her in the morning. I was so full of fucking shame and guilt for what I had done that I got my mother's car and I drove to her house and I left a note at her door because I couldn't call in the middle of the night because it's like 3 a.m.
Right.
I couldn't call in the middle of the night. So I left a note on her door just to let her know that, you know, I wouldn't be around. Like, I won't be around to do that. You know, because you can't leave a text. You don't want to wake them up.
Right.
And, like, you know, she lives with her parents. But it was literally just with the shame and guilt. Like, how could I meet a normal human being when I am this fucking...
Yeah, you're unfit for that.
Piece of shit that does these things. And whatever, I went home and, you know, that lasts for a day or two. And then about 3 weeks later, I'm back in Times Square.
Right.
And I bump into our friend.
The higher power.
And she turns to me and she says, have you got another $20?
That's crazy, man.
That's awesome.
So that's my story.
Oh, that's great.
No
man.
Embellishment.
No,
that's no great. Filter.
You could tell that it's real for sure, man.
Yeah.
I could just feel like the panic when she's like, I am the higher power. And you're just like, holy shit.
Fuck, man.
What have I done? I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I was nervous, man. I really thought like I was in real danger.
Because you have that, at that age.
Yeah.
You have this, or I don't know if everyone does. Clearly you do. I know I did. I know you did too, DC. This desire, this need to go out and find some adventure.
Yes. Mm.
Like you want to, it's like, you know.
Plus you're full
some rite of passage that, like.
Hormones and shit that
you're
are.
Full of hormones. Yeah. You feel immortal. You feel invincible. You're like, let's go and see what fucking craziness I can get into, you know. Mm. And then there's always that time or two where you're like, oh Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, I was terrible for doing it on my own. Even when I was drinking, I just love going off on these on my own adventures, which is, you know, can be worse.
That's what I would do too.
I would go, actually, when I was in Holland, it was the time that I wasn't with you.
Mm.
I would just go, I'd walk around, I'd hop on a bus, I didn't know where the fuck it was going, and just hit bars, and it was Rotterdam.
You could get lost in Rotterdam just, pretty easily. Yeah.
But aside from that, that reminds me...
It might be the most diverse city I've ever spent
time in. I've never been
in.
There.
Oh, it's cool.
I've only been to Amsterdam. City.
Oh, Rotterdam's way cooler, I think, than Amsterdam.
It's a cool city, man. But, and it all got ruined in World War II.
Oh, yeah.
You can shoot jokes about Germans.
All, like, these amazing new, newish architecture styles. It's a pretty awesome city.
Yeah, if you do any material about Germans, it kills. You know, it kills because they throw their bikes in the...
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But, like, we would do this, just real short, but we would do... You know, when I was a kid, you just don't think... Like, I had a friend who made... He came over, and he's like, we're going to go buy Coke with this fake money I made on a Xerox machine. So he made $100 bills on a fucking Xerox machine. They didn't look real at all.
Holy
He's like, we're going to go downtown D.C., and we're going to go buy fucking... These guys aren't going to know. It's dark. I put it in a washing machine. It'll be dark out or whatever. And I'm like, okay, you know, well...
Sure, let's do
it. I didn't even do Coke then. But I was like, this is an adventure. And he's like, then we'll go get a hooker or some shit. Like, I'm like, this is an adventure. And we went down there, and there was a guy on the corner and fucking like, see the Coke. I got the money to Coke. Gave him the money as he gave us the Coke. And then the guy's like, this ain't real. We're just fucking sped off. And the guy started chasing us.
Shit.
And then the Coke wasn't even real Coke. It was some other bullshit. It was like,
yeah.
You know, like baking soda. He's chasing us for the fucking baking soda. He's got the fake money. I'm like, what's going on? We'll call it even.
This
know?
Whole thing is a fake.
Do not pass go.
Yeah. But it was shit like that. I mean, I did a million things like that.
Yeah,
I got
so many
times
I'm
like,
drugs.
Thank God I made it through. Yeah. I remember I went in, some friends of mine and I went into the city, into New York. We were probably like 17. And we were like, we're going to buy some weed. Maybe we were 18 or 19. I'm going to buy some weed. So we go to Washington Square Park, which is where you would go to buy weed.
You could
back
get
then.
Weed there.
Yeah.
You could get weed there
apparently.
Pretty readily.
Still can.
And, you know, all you got to do is walk in, and the dude's like, smoke,
weed.
Catnip.
Yeah. That was the thing back in the day.
Yeah. So we go and we find this dude. It's probably like 9 o'clock on a Friday night or something. We find this dude. We make the exchange. We give him $20. He gives us 2 dime bags. We go and we open it up. It's not weed. I don't know what it is, but it's not weed. It doesn't smell right.
doesn't yeah. smoke right. Like, it's not weed.
It's good on pizza.
My friends are like, dude, just forget about it. But I'm like, no. Fuck that guy. He ripped us off. That was all the fucking money we had. I'm furious. Now I'm putting on a show for my friends, too.
Yeah.
Go back. We find the guy. Turned out to be right in front of where the old Boston was, but this uh-huh. is before that, uh-huh. years before. We go up to the guy, and I go right up to him, and I go, hey. I go, you sold us this shit, and it's not weed. I want my fucking money back. Dude reaches in his belt, pulls out a gun, and points it right at my fucking head. My friends are gone. I mean, it's not like they ran away and I watched them run away. They're just not there anymore.
Were they comics? This is before.
No, this is guys I grew up with.
I'm teasing.
They're just gone.
Yeah.
Except one of them stayed, but slowly was getting further away from me. But he stayed long enough to hear what I said. I don't know what was in my mind at that age. And I said, go ahead, fucking shoot me.
He did.
Go ahead, fucking shoot me.
Watching too many movies, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of stand by it because I could see.
He wasn't going to shoot.
He took out the gun and pointed at me, but I could see his face. And I'm like, this guy's not fucking shooting anybody. He's as scared as we are right
yeah.
now. And I go, fucking shoot me. Go ahead, shoot me. My friends are gone, vanished. But one of them stuck around long enough to hear me say that. And then, like, the next day, everyone was looking at me like,
you're the fucking man.
Fucking Bailey's crazy, dude. Did you hear what he did in the city? The guy gave me the $20.
Get out of here.
I swear to God. Huh. He goes, you're right, man. It was bullshit. Gave me the $20 back. And I went back and told my friends. Huh. I said, he gave me the fucking money back. And they didn't believe me. They didn't believe me. They're like, no, he didn't. You had 20. I'm like, no, guys. He gave me the fucking money back.
Would you have preferred to get the money back or an actual bag of weed?
Well, we ended up getting it. We ended up successfully getting weed from another guy. Yeah, and almost trying to get weed from that guy in the park.
Yeah, because I bought weed in there. It was you could get weed in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sure you still can. Yeah.
Yeah. You still can. But it was not the place. You wouldn't get ripped off that often there.
No. I think I had done it once before that, and it was fine. But I tried to go back to that same place and find the same guy, but it was a different guy.
Yeah.
And then later, I found the guy that I had been to once before. It's funny. Just the other night, I mean, the cellar's a couple blocks from there, you know, so we're always there again. You know when you're like, and this is unrelated, but, or semi-unrelated. You know when you get to a point where you're like kind of tired of your material?
Yes.
You're like, I've been doing this for a while. I needed something new that I'm inspired to do, you know? I couldn't find a new bit. I'm just like, I'm bored of all this shit. And I have a couple new ideas, but they're not really flowing. And I'm waiting for something to come to me, some inspiration. And this dude, this is just this past Friday, comes running at me, basically, right near where we were hitting
the
milk cartons.
Balls, yeah.
And he's got both his hands out flat, and he's got like half a pound of weed out on his hands in little baggies. And he comes walking at me really fast with like these bloodshot eyes. And he goes, I got good weed, man. I got good weed. And I'm like, dude, you're like a drug dealer in a movie. How are you real? You're supposed to be hiding this, you know? But so I ended up getting a bit out of it.
Oh, that was
out
good.
Of that, I'm, you know.
Yeah, I get offered like, weed a lot on West 3rd Street or on McDougal Street.
Yeah.
They don't think you're a cop. They always think I'm a cop. They don't think you're a cop.
Oh,
well, it's not that I think I'm a cop, but that's the bit. I'm like, why are you trying to sell me weed anyway? Anyone who knows me knows that I already have my own weed. And anyone who doesn't thinks I probably don't smoke because gym teachers don't smoke weed.
It's just a bit.
And
it's
that's
working.
What I look like. I look like a fucking gym teacher. So it's turned into this whole thing about, you know.
Oh, that's
so
good.
It inspired me into a new bit. But it was just so funny. The guy, he was literally like, if there was a drug dealer in a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
He would look like this guy. Yeah, he's like so over the top. I got good weed, man.
And that's why it's harder to get good fucking stores out of New York City because they sanitize the shit out of it, man.
Yeah, yeah, it's not like
at least
it used
there's
to
a
be,
couple
dude.
Of little bits of
yeah.
At least there's a little bit of craziness left in the place.
There is, yeah.
There
sometimes
especially...
you happen on some shit and you're like, ooh, I don't know what just happened here.
Yeah,
but
yeah, all you have to do is get on the subway in the summer. I think ride the A train in the summer, and then eventually something fucked up will happen that'll just be like, yeah, and it might be tandem. It might be a guy shitting himself in the corner with like someone singing and then like some imminent violence. I saw this argument. I was taking a train from Brooklyn. I saw this argument. What was the line the guy said? And I'm like, oh, that's such a great line. He's arguing with his wife, his girlfriend, baby mom. Right. I don't know right. what it was. The Whatever. Kid's there. So it's like one of those ones where you're like, oof.
Yeah.
You know, it's harsh. And she's bitching at him. And then he goes, it used to be me and you against the world. Now it's you and the world against me.
Wow, everyone can relate to that feeling.
Tupac lyric, I feel.
I'm like, that's got to be a fucking lyric if it's not, you know. And nobody noticed it. I'm like, it's a great fucking lyric.
Write it down.
Yeah, I wrote it down.
Dude,
it used to
is
be
definitely...
you and me against the world. Now it's you and the world against me.
Yeah,
I love it. It's a
that
line for
is
a script.
Like an opening line of the Dr. Phil episode, if I ever heard one.
It was kind of genius, man.
Did I tell you about when you said crazy shit on the train? All these things came to mind.
Oh, yeah.
One time I was getting on a train in like Queens Plaza. I think it's Queen. Is it Queens Plaza?
Queens or Queensborough Plaza? Either Plaza. Or.
I don't think I've told this on the show before, but it was my now ex-wife and I. We get on the train. We sit down. It's packed. Right before the doors start to close, this giant dude in full like camouflage gets on. He's got paint under, you know, the black paint under his eyes. He's wearing full camouflage. He's a big fat guy. And everyone is immediately scared of him, right? You know what I mean? Like when somebody comes in or you see somebody somewhere and you just kind of know instinctively this person is dangerous. Like this guy is not safe. Don't fuck with this guy.
Yeah.
The second you see him, the second he walks on, everybody just kind of goes, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
And he starts into this whole spiel and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, please forgive the interruption. But I need the help of strangers because I've contracted the AIDS virus from people putting things in my mouth while I was sleeping.
Bernie Sanders has AIDS?
Everyone's like, what the fuck? So now everyone's trying not to laugh. We're deathly afraid of this guy. But what he just said is like, oh my God, dude, did you really just say that? And it was much longer than that. It took like a minute for him to get to the part about I've contracted the AIDS virus from people putting things in my mouth while I was sleeping. And then it's over, and everyone's like, oh, thank God it's over. And then he did it in Spanish. Except for the part where he says, with people putting things in my mouth while I was sleeping.
Did he repeat that in English?
He repeated that in English at the end of it.
He doesn't know how to say that in Spanish.
It was so hard not to laugh. I'm like, if I laugh, this guy's going to fucking stab me or something. But everyone's just looking at the floor.
You told me once, I think it was at the Boston, you were doing some crowd work, and some guy just volunteered. He's like, he looked at you and he's like, I killed a hooker in Tijuana.
Yes.
Right?
And yes. It was,
yeah, I mean.
Yeah, and it wasn't a joke.
Yeah.
I said, what's up with you, buddy? What's your story? I think I was opening the show or I was emceeing, and the dude just goes, I killed a hooker in Tijuana. And the whole place just falls silent. And he goes, nobody knows. And I go, well, we all know now. But it wasn't a joke. Like, it was clear that he was not joking. And then, I swear to God, that guy was at Tall But True a few weeks ago.
That guy's a comic. I won't mention his name, but he came up after Tall But True, after the live show. And he's like, I got a great story about me trying to smother my wife with a pillow.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Same guy?
No,
I thought
no,
it was the same guy,
else.
But he's
no, because no. I assume that guy was Spanish.
He was. They look alike.
This guy's Latino. I don't know from. But so that's why it was
similar. I got a great story. That's racist. Yeah, I have no idea where
all
people
Latinos
are from.
That have he was... murderous tendencies look alike.
No, this dude.
They look
two
like each other.
This dude's a comic. I know. I worked with a guy at some point. It was funny.
He said it. He wasn't
kidding.
He said
it deadpan. He was not.
I got a great story I could tell on your show. Yeah, like, what is it? He's like, oh, it's about when I tried to murder my wife by suffocating her with a pillow.
Yeah. And we're like, we're going to hold that off for
the
that.
We're going to
say that
murder.
For the big end of your show.
Yeah, attempted murder confessions for another time.
We're doing a show at Rikers.
Yeah.
You should come to that one and you could stay.
Right.
You could just stay there when it's over.
Oh, shit, man.
Wow.
Hey, man, your podcast is long. What time is it?
It's just hot.
The
in
listeners
here,
are like, you're telling us. I was just about to say, I think it's about time to wrap it up. We've had plenty of great stories. Thanks to our guest, Des Bishop.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks. Yeah. For giving me a chance to tell some stories I wouldn't normally tell.
Dude, that was fucking great. I love that story.
That was a
man.
Great story, man. Yeah. It really was. It had all the...
And I don't have any punchlines in it. You know, no, like, it's a clearly unrehearsed story.
You got another $20. Yeah. is a pretty good capper.
It's a nice hook.
A lot of stories don't have an end like that. Yeah. You know? And that's funny. It's
sort of
brings
teeter off
full
a lot
circle.
Of the time.
Cue 50 people in an 80-seater venue downtown. Yeah. Right. Standing up in applause.
Is there any point to these stories?
A work of art.
A lot of beards getting stroked.
Yeah, beautiful. Have you got another $20? Blackout. Up. Right. Bow, clap, walk off, come back out, clap. New York Times.
Right.
Pretty good story. A story of a New York long gone.
A New York of a different time.
Yeah. Yes,
when I was one of the first times I ever went into New York, this is very quick, I was with my family and another family from out of town who was visiting us. So it's like two parents, two kids from each family. And we're walking along and we're like just north of Times Square. And I look at a shop window and I think it's a toy store. And I say, ooh, let's go in there. But it's a sex shop. And I didn't get it. As a kid, you know, I was like fucking 10 or 11. And I go, ooh, let's go in there. And they all just fucking die laughing. And I was so embarrassed when I realized what it was. You know?
G.I. Joe's got a big pink bazooka with nubs on it.
There was one in Main Street Flushing, the Jolly Joint. We used to go in there when we were like 13. Thought it was fucking hilarious. And they didn't stop us going in.
That's the best.
Yeah, like it's one of these kids might buy something.
Yeah. But like when you think of it now, it's like they were so fucking worried about us going into those places. But like the violence on the television was fine.
Yeah exactly.
When you think about it.
It's a good point.
It's like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, sex is taboo, but violence is okay. It's ridiculous.
Who cares if you look at like a fake cock and a fucking vibrating vagina?
Yeah.
Yeah, the sooner you get over that, the better.
The blow-up doll gives you hope if you're a virgin. You might get laid somehow. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, shit.
Well, so what? Where can people find you, Des, if they want to?
Well, they can find me on Twitter, at Des Bishop, Instagram, Des Bishop, Snapchat, Des Buffer.
Des Buffer?
Yes, yeah, long story. It's so stupid. Anyway, Buffer is a Irish traveler slang for a settled person. Irish gypsy slang for settled people. So for
like
some reason,
like a straight vanilla person or something, or like a
buffer. It's just they have their own like slang. These Irish gypsies.
I love those guys with those tapes, man. Where they're challenging each other.
Oh yeah, those guys. Yeah, the guys that fight. The way Brad Pitt plays an Irish traveler in Snatch.
In Snatch, right?
Big guy, dog
McGinley or
That's from Armagh.
Pikey? Is that the same thing?
Pikey's a slang for traveler. Yeah.
Right. That's what I thought.
Yeah, so,
that's great. You can't understand a fucking word he says in the entire movie.
Yeah.
He does a great job of it.
I mean, I can.
Yeah. But, really? You can follow him?
Well, I lived with travelers for a month. I made a television show about doing stand-up comedy workshops with travelers.
Oh, shit. Is that on YouTube?
It is, actually. Joy in the Hood, episode four.
Joy in the Hood, episode four. Yeah. Cool. And do you have a date? Do you have any dates coming up you want to plug?
Nothing important. It's all on my website, desbishop.net.
Oh, okay. So check out Des at desbishop.net. Check me out at therealbenbailey.com. Please subscribe to Tall But True if you haven't yet. Please go on and review the show on iTunes if you liked it. If you didn't, don't say anything.
Yes.
You don't
have 5 stars nice to say. And a review helps with the old... helps with your position in the charts.
Absolutely. And DC Benny is?
A Real DC Benny on Instagram, dcbenny.com. We have our live show, next live show coming up.
August 9th, coming up.
August 9th. The topic is...
Fat Black Pussycat.
Survival.
Telling stories of survival.
Yes.
We could tell a couple that we told here today.
You told. You could definitely tell your weed story.
Yeah, no doubt. I was so scared.
There you go.
But
you
I wasn't showing it, man. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to Tall But True. Please come back and listen again. Adios.